Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and we are still in the midst of the general election campaign. But Martin, you're a gouger, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, before we get into this bit of housekeeping, we need patrons. Hang on, you know the deal.
Can I come in? Sorry. We know we need patrons, right? Reboot Pod, Disturbing the Peace Pod, Echo Chamber, we rely on people to come in, on board, listen, share, tell, like. We do also need you to come on board, price for a cup of coffee. It's struggling. Go on. Anyway, Martin, gouger.
Look, class war, Tony. And I am very, very glad that class has been brought up into this, because Leo Varadkar has said class is never an issue in Ireland. The entire state was founded on a class war. A landlord is still a landlord, no matter what you say. And we were warned about this. We were warned by Pearce about this. Or sorry, Connolly about this. You know, is your landlord not also an Irishman? So, yes, this is a class war, without a doubt. And it's a class election, without a doubt.
As I pointed out, the electorate is a variety of classes. Politics should look like that. Now, the Taoiseach said we don't want a class war in politics. He politicised with the greatest statement that got him elected: welfare cheats cheat us all. What he did was actually class warfare. The man is living in cloud cuckoo land if he believes that class isn't an issue. If you look at education outcomes, if you look at health outcomes, if you look at actual how long people live, class dictates a lot of that. What we're talking about wants to raise that up. It doesn't want to take away from people who are already find themselves in the middle and upper class. We want to raise it up. So for him to turn around and say, let's leave it out of it, that is actually disgraceful. And what also is disgraceful is what he carried on yesterday saying it's not an issue. And then he called Fianna Fáil backwoodsmen. Okay? That phrase means basically slow and uncouth. It means you're a swamp man.
Yeah.
And what that is class. This is the same person who told Vincent Brown that, you know, the reason he's in shape now and not obese is because he believed in manifest destiny and making his own thing. Manifest destiny is a racist phrase that was used by American settlers to take land from Indians. The level of disconnect from reality within Fine Gael has come across in this election week after week, day after day.
Simon Harris put out a tweet where he compared the rise of the left as Trumpian and following Johnson. Now, honest to God, how are they getting away with this? He got ratioed to bits, and rightly so. This is a move to the left, not a move to the right.
Oh, no, hang on. Let's be honest. They're throwing populism as a smear, okay? Yeah. Populism as a slur. That's because you don't understand the origin of populism. Populism came out of the 1890s in the US when there were people working in manufacturing, early manufacturing, that were getting low wages and paying the rent to the same guy who was paying them the wages. And they were going, there's something wrong with this. And a populist wave came up. And what it actually did was, it meant that for the birth in the US of actual some sort of form of social justice was brought in, you know, nets where people can't fall below, and these very rudimentary things scared the shit out of the establishment in between 1890 and 1920s. That was what populism meant. It did. We've bastardized it now to say that populism links to these right-wing head cases. That's not what we're doing here in Ireland.
But also, populism, Tony, every single party appeals to their base.
Yeah.
Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going with tax cuts, ceases, whatever they can to try and get their popular base on board. Politics is populism. You can't separate the two. You're never going to be elected as an unpopular party.
Well, I got to come in on that, because that dishonesty is on all sides. That dishonesty is on all sides. What we are facing this election now, and there's, you know, I'm hearing the Taoiseach say, fear of capital will flee. I'm hearing the left say these are the initiatives we're going to bring in, and this is what we're going to do in terms of taxing these multinationals. Actually, you're both being dishonest. So the Taoiseach can't go far enough and tell the truth, because if he tells the truth, he has to admit that Ireland is a tax haven. He has to be totally honest about that. And we have a services sector built up to support that. I know what I'm talking about. After 20 years in financial services, this is my bread and butter. On the other side, you have the other saying that, oh, don't worry about it, it'll be grand. This money will go. But here's the thing. Here's the question we have to ask one another. are we happy that some part of our economy is built upon taking money that should be taxed elsewhere and not really taxing it here at all, but being a conduit? We're the best wavin pipes in the world. Yeah. We let it pass through. We take our professional fees off the top of it. And that we have an economy, you know, a large economy of advisors and tax consultants, accountants, and these people all earn a living and they pay their taxes and their PRSA. Of course they're pushing back, but it's dishonesty on both parts, Martin. It's you have to be honest about it. This is Ireland is a tax haven. It's a very good one. We've changed our laws and all to address it. But don't tell me that it won't have an impact should we have a left-wing government that does the things that they say they're going to do. I happen to believe they won't. I'm a bit more cynical. I think some of the things that you'll find is they will moderate in certain things, that promises that they've made, and then they'll say to you, which isn't that politics?
I don't know, Tony. I think the left is going to have to come out, and I have heard this on the ground, and this is the discussion that's going on between those on the left, is we must actually perform when we get into government. We must actually, we can't do what Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have always done. We must actually perform. That's very heartening to hear. It's very heartening to hear that there are people who are going, we're going in and we're going to actually get some results. We are not going in to try and keep the boat moving along the way it's always been moving along.
I'll bring you back to the Syriza getting elected in Greece. Yanis Varoufakis was as close to you now sitting to me as he was when he said that he went in as the finance minister and he got told he had 100 days worth of funding left. And they said, well, we have to deliver on our promises. And one of their promises was, for example, that they would stop some of the drilling that was going on for that was destroying natural habitats, and they would stop it. And they did. The first week, boom, gone. And then they went and they said, where's our money? We're not paying you. And they said, why aren't you paying us? Well, but we have 90-day credit line or whatever it was. And I'm bastardizing the phraseology here. And it was purely because big business said, actually, no, you play ball with us and turn the drills back on, or we don't give you the money that keeps paying your civil servants. So let's not lie and say that there is not a global capital bully boy out there. But also let's not lie and say Ireland is totally dependent on it. We have got potential to build our economy differently, and that's going to have to happen.
Sustainably.
But be honest about it. Tell the truth.
Because outside of Ireland, they look in at our tax model, and particularly in Europe, they are very unhappy with our corporate tax model.
And they're coming for it anyway.
So it's going to change anyway.
With the UK gone, we have no ally left.
No. And the UK bolstered us a lot when it came to our tax arrangements.
Absolutely. Look, it's the last week of the campaign. Okay. It's been very negative. It's been actually, some of it for me has been kind of disgraceful.
I told you it was going to be knives out. I said knives out.
Yeah.
And it's going to be knives out from here to the end, on all sides. We've seen it now with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They are so busy punching at each other that they're only hitting side glances at the shinners now, you know?
Yeah. Well, funny thing. Okay. I want to go back to the class thing that we started with because it's important. It's only a few months ago that, and this is in the newspapers, you can see it, that Fine Gael workshopped the slogan, "Let Leo lead."
Yeah.
That has become apparent that he's been a disaster as the focus point of a campaign. Micheál Martin has been less of a disaster and looks good just by comparison. But to tell me that in Ireland, you know, my local Fine Gael candidate is telling people that he's proud of his Ballymun roots, but he spent the last 5 years kicking Ballymun and the working class, and I'm sick of it. So, no, Fine Gael have decided to go, forget about the last 5 years, we can be the change that you want us, we can change. It's the lad who's coming back to the missus going, listen, I can change, honey, I can change.
Yeah, I'm very sorry.
Kick him out, girl. You know?
There are a few important things that I feel I just have to put in here. First of all, vote left, transfer left. Don't lose your nerve now. Don't lose it. You're on the cusp of this. Look what happened in Scotland. Had they voted for independence, they wouldn't be leaving the EU. They'd have autonomy over their own decisions. They wouldn't be stuck in this Brexit mire that they're stuck in and going to be stuck in for a very long time because they're not going to get another shot at a referendum anytime soon.
If I can come in and just say that, Martin, you're spot on, because these opportunities, if we don't take it now, and you think the establishment, and when I say the establishment, I mean the banks, the corporations, the parts of the media and other parts that are absolutely collectively captured by a certain ideology, whether they know it or not, they are going to come back and say, we'll push back now, because it was a 3-week campaign and no one saw it coming.
Yeah. So we did. Yeah. We did. Let's be really honest about this, Tony, and let's be really honest. Give ourselves a pat on the back for once. We were the only ones who saw it. We have spoken to enough people in here over the last 2.5 years to know where the real zeitgeist was. And we were on the zeitgeist. We've been on it from day one. We said a broad left coalition is on the cards. There is no way Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going to have monopoly on power going forward. People have changed. The world has changed. We want results. There are people under 55 are now saying, no, we don't want this old way of doing things. We want to be a modern country where you can get a bus to work and be in work in half an hour, where you can walk into a hospital if you're sick and be seen by somebody, and where you can afford rent, save for a house. Like, nobody's saying house is free. We're saying give people the opportunity. Give them hope. Hope is what this is about.
Imagine that those ideas are radical.
We were radical 2.5 years ago. We are not radical now. We are the mainstream voice now. We are where the mainstream is. All those Pat Leahys and the Irish Times and everybody else, you were wrong. You were wrong, and we were right. And we've been telling you this for ages. Maybe you'll listen in future and stop being so bloody conservative about everything.
Well, we did call our podcast the Echo Chamber,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, but we did it on purpose. We did it on purpose. You know, we wanted people to understand that you are listening to an echo chamber when you're listening to the same voices over and over and over.
I go back.
And they're making the same mistake. Alison O'Connor is a permanent fucking feature on TV. Permanent.
I go back to what, more importantly, never mind these Pallies and Alison O'Connor, go back to what John Biss and Rita Fagan talk about getting the guys out of the Leinster House bubble and out into the working class community to see the people who their politics actually affects in their lived experiences.
Yeah, get out of Dublin 4.
And when you do that, you understand, yes, so I'm not with you jumping up and down saying we were this, we were that. We'll wait until see how it comes out on Sunday.
No matter what happens with this election, no matter what happens, the Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael monopoly is over. It's over.
I agree.
If it doesn't come to fruition this time, it's because people will bottle it. And they will bottle it. And I'm just saying, don't bottle it now. You have come 99.99% of the way. Don't bottle it in the voting booth. Just don't do it.
We have a couple of interviews coming up for you now. Before we do, again, listen, honest, I'm not even sugarcoating it. We do need people to come on board. We're not a viable entity, but we are absolutely seeing a huge spike in the numbers that we do. We foolishly do this completely independently. We have our own server, our own IT, our own all this sort of stuff, so it all costs money. And you know what? I'll be bashed by my wife if it doesn't become viable shortly. And Martin is grinning away at me, but the truth is, we need you to go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and give us a hand.
Oh, the left block is coming. Oh, the left block is coming.
It's great to be joined in the Tortoise Shack by our old friend, Gary Gannon, Social Democrats, Dublin Central. Gary, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad. You are literally, your constituency starts about 10 metres down to my right.
We drew the boundary just to keep you outside of it. We felt it was really important.
I have a feeling there's a guy from Fine Gael who would be delighted if it was just 10 metres the other side.
Him and Pascal were fighting over you during the redraw. You take him. No, you take him.
You can joke, but I would imagine that there's a lot of ill will towards me. But anyway, nonetheless, Gary, this has been a long, and I mean this in the terms of from the Europeans and the locals and now on to the generals. It's been a long campaign for you. How are you finding it?
I'm loving it. These are things I get up in the morning for, like going out talking to people outdoors. It has been long, and it does feel some way like we went straight from the European, which was mental and really quite a mammoth task, into a general, which is certainly a smaller constituency, but getting around talking to a couple of hundred people a day. But this is like, I'm in politics. This is, you have to love doing this part of it. And there is times where you're just walking along and I fall behind because I'm talking to someone. And then you look up the road and you see about 12 of your mates kind of walking and some of them are wearing purple jackets and it's humbling and you just feel lucky. So, I mean, this, you have to enjoy this part of it.
You're in politics now. Look, we've spoken to you. This is the third time you've been in here. You're from the inner city. You've represented that community. If you are selected, if you get a seat, as they keep saying, what is your ambition? Because I know we talk about, I've seen the videos, Gary. Give us the pitch.
Do you know what? In terms of the North Inner City, like growing up, you know, I was always in sport with Tony Gregory and people like that. My man and my dad, he went out and they campaigned for Tony and, you know, Tony helped me in a multitude of different ways. He even wrote a letter for college for me. But my pitch to the North Inner City is that we've always had great activists. We've always had people that can stand up and kind of articulate the grievances and the frustrations. We've never really had great legislators. We've never had people that want to build a collective movement and see the North Inner City, the inequalities or the beginnings of opportunity that spring there and place them in a national context. So for me, I'm inspired by the movements that took place and where I grew up. That's where my values were enshrined. But I want to build something bigger.
Yeah, it's like the Dublin Central candidates have generally been that independent who held the balance of power, not the independent, a group that could actually achieve greatness in itself.
And that for me, like, I mean, obviously, Mick Rafferty, who was one of the architects of the Gregory deal, and he's a good friend of mine, has been for a long time. You know, he came out last week and he endorsed me as a Social Democrat. And that was the first time Mick has endorsed me as a Social Democrat. He's endorsed me as an independent. He's been a source of inspiration and guidance to me personally. But he came out last week and he endorsed me as a Social Democrat. And he said something really interesting. He said, when him and Tony and that Gregory movement and Fergus McCabe, real heroes like that, were starting out, the problems that the inner city were facing were very kind of entrenched poverty. I mean, housing, inequality, inability to access education, healthcare. But as time has progressed, those same issues are national issues now. So the time for kind of those strong local voices, don't get me wrong, I still think there's an important place for them, but I've chosen to be something to take inspiration from that movement, but see it on a collective platform. We need a national Gregory deal, for want of a better phrase. We need people that want to go in and kind of mass programs of house building, invest in a national health service, see publicly funded childcare as a means of investing in the economy. You know, these are national problems. You're never going to be able to solve the problems that motivated me to get into politics if I only see them on the scale of the inner city. They have to be confronted nationally.
And you're saying that the inner city had unique problems, but these unique problems have now spread to the rest of the country.
Of course, yeah. So Mick Rafferty said that last week when he was endorsing me, but it's very clear. You know, the problems of the inner city. And even if you take, for example, one of the most hypocritical acts of politics that we've seen in the last 3 years, the Mulvey report, when the crime and criminality was happening in the inner city, you had Enda Kenny and this plethora of kind of ministers going in and treating the inner city like a zoo and accepting the fact that there was a symmetry between crime and inequality in the inner city, but choosing to only focus on that small little geographical area. And then you're seeing the same level of crime popping up all over the country and the same violence spreading out. If you see those problems in isolation, you're never going to confront them.
Well, I suppose too, they looked at the problems in Dublin's inner city and they said, we'll solve this by opening a Garda station in Steppeside. You know, I mean, it was ridiculous.
They looked at the problems in the inner city and he said, you know what, this is a good opportunity for some press releases. It was unforgivable. And even in terms of that political decision of opening the Garda station in Steppeside, I think anyone that wants to legislate or create laws in this country and talk about crime but actually then makes a political decision to open a Garda station in Steppeside without any justification for it, you lose legitimacy to see yourself as being tough on crime, which I don't really like, or tough on the causes of crime. But even when you compound that by walking into the inner city and saying we're going to solve those problems by recognising the symmetry between poverty and inequality, but only in this small, little, tiny geographical area, less than a mile square long, that for me was unforgivable. It was hypocritical. If you're going to recognise that symmetry there, how can you say it doesn't exist elsewhere?
Well, tough on crime too is kind of a right-wing catchphrase. Tough on crime means tough on the areas where crime comes from, where there is deprivation, where there is poor
Project
education.
Clear.
You know, tough on crime is the last step. You know, you have to be strong on education, strong on housing, strong on all the problems that build into crime.
And Tony Blair is an absolute tyrant and should always be held in that regard. But one of the things that he got right was this idea of tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. And for me, when you look at kind of how we develop society, how we develop an inner city community, this Mulvey report went in there. Start talking about how they're going to invest in, essentially it was a 5 million little platform for Pascal Donoghue and some of his ministers to walk around the inner city, almost in a way that would make the Healy Rays blush. They went in and they gave projects. I like this project, I'll give them some money. I'll give this particular school over here some money. Not recognising that on a national scale, community development across the country was cut by 37% during the period of austerity. And they got a 5 million pot through this Mulvey report and press releases and used it to build up their election bases. But I used that as a kind of a comparison of how we can't solve the problems of the inner city without seeing them nationally. It was kind of a more recent comparison. And that, for me, goes back to this question of the Gregory deal and looking at problems in isolation and why I'm part of a movement, a social democratic movement that's looking to see these same problems and confront them on a national scale.
Within the shake-up now, your party is polling consistently around the 5% mark. There's potential there in terms of a few seats now added to the two that you have currently. What's your ambition for that? I know you've kind of outlined this Gregory deal, but what does that mean if you're going to talk, sit down and say, look around the makeup of the next stall and say, who do you think can get things done?
For me, it's about looking at what do we want to achieve. So a small party like the Social Democrats, we have five. You see what they've already done when having two. I mean, Roisin was absolutely instrumental in bringing together a cross-party group for the Sláinte Care proposal, for example. Catherine Murphy has held, looked power in the eye and held it to account in a manner that very few other TDs could claim to have done in terms of the FEI scandals, the he who should not be named, but we will anyway. Dennis O'Brien.
Dennis O'Brien. Don't worry about saying it.
Oh, don't want your gaff taken off you, Tony. So in terms of holding people like Dennis O'Brien and the FEI to account, they've achieved remarkable things, and more TDs together will support them in that. For me, it's about things like a national health service. We should never look across the world and to be too envious of the British, but one of the things they got right was in the NHS. It's the most beautiful political development that I haven't seen. It was certainly done before me. But if you think about the history of politics, the NHS is just a beautiful vision. Why can't we not have a national health service here? I would absolutely trust people like the Social Democrats. If Roisin Shorthall was the Minister for Health, for example, that would be a minimum that we should be looking to achieve.
That, I mean, we did this a little exercise in this last week, you know, put names on ministers if there was a broad left coalition. And it went down very well.
Of course it did.
And,
yeah.
People, you know, when people are able to put a name and say, well, Roisin Shorthall is the right person for health.
That's what this election's about. That's why you're seeing a surge towards left wing parties, because it's not just about he fixed the roads or me, Puritans vote for that political party. It's like, I'd love Roisin Shorthall to be the Minister for Health. And that comes up for me at doors constantly. Someone like Eoghan O'Brien, I mean, it's had issues.
Natural for housing.
But, you know, I mean, he would be an incredible housing minister.
Yeah. But that brings us on to the next question, the makeup of the next stall.
Before we get there, we have to be important. If we're going to talk about the makeup of the next stall, we have to talk about left unity. Gary, you know you went through a tough time over Devney Gardens.
Yeah.
And you saw the left as a unit there was no left unity in that. There were simply people pushing it. And me and you agreed to disagree on the deal that was done on O'Devney, but nonetheless,
I think it's the idea of the deal. I don't think we can call it a deal because I didn't get into a room and said, okay, this is the deal. This was 4 years of the land housing initiative being pushed through the city council as a program. Like, I mean, and I think because we're so close to the idea of left unity, I don't want to throw barbs.
Yeah.
But I mean, this was Sinn Féin.
I appreciate that.
It was a Sinn Féin controlled council. They pushed the idea that this was the only show in town. We got to the point, it was 4 years into the development. The council makeup changed. Sinn Féin went from 18 councillors down to 8. It was a different makeup, and we were left at that point with a decision. There's 824 houses there. We had the possibility, we still do have the possibility that 80% of those will be some form of public housing, be that cost rental, social housing, 260, affordable, that's between 240 and 300, and I don't want to call that affordable because it isn't affordable for everybody, so we shouldn't. But it was the choice we were left with was yes or no. I didn't mind the fact that people were protesting outside. I think the protest outside is the absolute essence of democracy. People chasing me home with cameras. You know what? I'm in politics, so what? That's going to happen once in a while. People have cheered me and I'm doing well. They get to criticise me when I'm feeling I'm not. But the misconception that somehow we voted against public housing was wrong. It was a choice of 824 units of housing that can get built, 260 or so of those will be social, and kids, and I am going to personalise it, because we are down on Park Age Street at least once a week with families, we do see kind of people coming to me with their kids in hotel rooms, and if I was to say to them, I voted against that, and you'll have to wait for however, I'm not sure I could look at myself in the mirror. I've been on that list.
You've actually drawn, okay, I'm going to be very quick on this. You've actually said it was yes or no, but then you've said there was a third way. And the third way was the issue that that you chose not to explore in terms of taking. Because what you've said there was that it would be, it could potentially mean on a third way of being a longer time people waiting for those. And that was what you couldn't countenance. I'm not here to kick you about this.
Well, I'll kick you back.
But I'm simply saying that these are this was put on the table. You went through
it
with
was
it.
But
the lesson has to be that on the left, There was a lot of outrage.
Because the left is not one homogenous group.
No, but shouldn't be either.
It shouldn't be. And that's, I don't have any problems. There's always been kind of a natural hostility between the idea of social democracy and some of the kind of the further left. And that natural hostility has always existed. For me, it's about interfering. If we accept that the neoliberal system is violent and that people experience suffering and a form of savagery being in hotel rooms, then there is a sense from some people that if people on tour see us as kind of an in-between, that if we interfere and say, actually, I'm going to try to alleviate that suffering by making a decision that's uncomfortable for me, but knowing that at least 260 families won't be living in hotel rooms. That kind of goes against someone else's belief that actually the more the kind of working class suffer, eventually they'll rise up and overthrow this kind of neoliberal regime. And that hostility between those of us who choose to interfere and those of us who would prolong the savagery on the basis that they think they will then rise up and overthrow the system, that's a natural hostility that exists. It is strange, but I accept the fact that it's there. But when it comes to what we do share, now is the time for talking about the common platform. And the common platform for me is now is the time where we actually have these people on the run. So for the next week or whatever it is, and certainly afterwards, let's unite, let's start talking about mass public housing building programs, national health services, Keynesian economics, where the state consistently intervenes in the economy as a way of alleviating the cost of living and people's burdens and the violence that families are experiencing this unjust system.
And that brings me back now. I've asked this question a lot of candidates. We're going to rephrase it a little differently for you.
Thanks, Martin.
Are you excited about the prospect of a broad left coalition?
I would love the idea of a broad left coalition. I would absolutely love it. I think the potential is there for it. I think if we go across the left, I mean, Owen O'Brien is incredibly impressive. Roisin and Catchin and my own party is wonderful. I have a lot of respect for Jed Nash. Richard Boy Barrett, I think, is just a really great guy. Claire Daly gone off to Europe. You know, there's people there who would actually, we're in a position to genuinely change this country.
And it is simply a numbers game. I mean, the left getting on together is another numbers
game. Let's go back to Portugal. 40 years of right wing replacing right wing, centre right for slightly more centre right or whatever. And they turned around at the end of it all, and they managed to turn around and say to the parties that were saying that part of their manifesto say we're naturally anti-EU or naturally certain aspects or, you know, maybe we want to use that word. And I'll use it loosely, Puritans in certain mm-hmm. aspects. And they turn around and say, well, actually, can we agree that we'd like to eradicate poverty? And that was fairly simple, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they've been working at it.
Yeah. And I suppose that has to be the destination. It's like, what is the common platforms that we agree on?
Mm.
You know, if we went through People for Profits manifestos, went through the Workers' Party manifesto, we don't disagree on anything. We probably have different ideas of how we get there, but we don't disagree on it. So I don't want to be sitting around there talking about kind of that which the ideological differences that divide us or who's more pure. And to be honest with you, it doesn't happen as much as Twitter would give the impression that it does. And I've been I've been a perpetrator of that actually in terms of talking about kind of ideological purity and that. But actually when it gets down to the brass tacks of it, there's a hell of a lot that unites us. Yeah. Far, far more than divides us. Mm.
I think it is. There's a sense that those on the left want to raise the floor, not pull down the ceiling. They just want to raise the floor.
Social democracy for me is about minimums. It's not about maximum. That's for social democracy. For me, is about minimum. So what's the minimum standard of education we should have? What's the minimum standard of healthcare that should be afforded? And that, and raising the minimums to a point where decency and compassion and just common sense is brought back into politics.
But in policy wise, that's a right to housing.
Policy wise, that looks like a right to housing. That looks like a mass public housing building program. It isn't a unicorn. You know, this exists. And I mean, if you think about Cabra, which I represent, that was built by the state. Look at Crumlin. Look at all those lovely housing estates that all over this city and all over, not so much all over the country, but certainly all over the city. They were built by the state. When you think about an NHS, look at the UK. The UK is still falling apart. It's been underfunded, but it was the way up where I'd rather be treated in the NHS even now. If you look at state investments in the economy, look at the Nordic countries. I mean, if you look at people who value their taxation system, will see it as a means of investing in their economy, lowering the cost of living. It exists. We're a small little state. There's no reason why we can't radically change it by investing in ourselves.
And I agree with you there. We get the narrative. We are a small open economy. We are subject to the winds of change, but that also works in our favor. It's the old guerrilla war tactic. You are big. You are small. Yeah. They are big. You can move fast. They move slow.
And we've always demonstrated a lot of moxie, you know, that way. And it's even just investing in things like even our artists. You know, we launched our arts policy the other day, which gave me time to think in the election about actually the value and contribution that our arts and culture and those who chose to engage in that have done for their economy. And it's like, even when our recession, if you think about George Sharp, when you think about the recession short in the 80s and the 90s and even 2008, it was exactly those people who kept us going. And we have to be investing in ourselves. And when I talk about investing in ourselves, it is our hospitals, our schools, it's our housing, and it's our communities, and even seeing arts as being to the forefront of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to agree with you on that. Going to move us on a little. Your constituency, what particularly do you have to say to your constituents?
To my constituents, I suppose I'll rehash something I said earlier, because the idea that we've always had great agitators in our constituency, we need great legislators. We need people to come in who want to govern. For me, people have always been very good at using their voices to highlight injustice. We need people who are prepared to use the pen, to allocate budgets in a way that are fair and reasonable, to develop legislation by listening to experts. That's the type of activist I want to be for my community. Somebody that uses the pen as a means of improving people's lives.
Last one for me, and it's an odd question, but I want to ask you because I think it's
how strange coming from you, Tony.
Do you think that your politics is of the left?
Yeah, I think my politics is the very essence of the left. One of the things I'll never come into this room or any other is doing auction politics with people's taxation, for example. For me, that's the very essence of left-wing politics. It's about fairness. It's about decency. It's about being and of always thinking collective. In any political decision I'm taking, the collective is always at the forefront of my consideration.
Do you consider the Sock Dems to be a voice of the working people?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you think about the Sock Dems candidates, when you think about Tara Deasy working in the drugs task force, when you think about Noel O'Toole down there in Galway, who very much comes from that community, embodies its values, Carly Bailey, for example, who's been politicised by her own experience, the Sock Dems were formed by people who were politicised mostly following the crash of 2008. They became enraged during the period of austerity, and we committed ourselves to doing a little bit better. We're absolutely of the people in the Social Democrats.
Thank you so much for coming in and having this chat with us, Kerry.
Thanks for having me.
We wish you the very best, and hope you do well. We really do hope you do well.
It's always a pleasure to come in, guys. You're doing an incredible job.
Thanks,
Kerry. You know, best of luck, and listen, the message is simple. We keep saying it. What is it, Martin? Vote left, transfer left?
Vote left, transfer left, and on the day, don't bottle it. Do not bottle it. You have this chance. Take it. Both hands.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Thank you.
Hello, and we are joined by Rita Cronin. Rita is the Sinn Féin candidate for Kildare North. Hi, Rita, how are you?
Good morning, how are you, Martin?
Rita, just want to ask you first, why did you get into politics?
Okay, I got into politics, I suppose, because I just didn't like what I saw there. I'm running this general election now as a, you know, principled left-wing voice for North Kildare. if you look at the rest of the fields that's here standing with me in North Clare, you'll see, or look at the outgoing TDs, there's Catherine Murphy, who would be centre left, but yet again we have three right wing TDs virtually in government. I think we have to counter the right wing agenda that's out there. You know, ordinary people, they are working, they are getting up early in the morning, they're running to stand still most of the time. Four of the parties on the ticket, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Labour Party, Green Party, have been in coalition government in the recent past. You know, you could nearly lump them in as one party. I just couldn't sit this out, Martin. I wanted to show the people of North Kildare that I'm keeping the faith in them. Those that came out for me in 2014, 2016, and the bad day we had with the locals the last time, I wanted to show them that I've been keeping the faith in them, and I'm asking them what they keep the faith in me too.
And you come from an activist background. I mean, we, many years ago when austerity was first introduced, you and I sat on O'Connell Bridge protesting it back in the day, and that was before you were an activist then at that stage. So you're coming from a background of activism.
That's right, yeah. My father was in the guards, and he was often saying, if he'd be called to a protest, I hope I don't find ways of change some bridge or some gate or something like that. Yes, I would be, and I come from an activist background.
Rita, just in terms of, you know, you've said why you want to run, but if you get in, what do you want to do?
First of all, Tony, I want to give ordinary people hope. I want them to know, to have that knowledge that there's a Republican voice out there ready to represent them, their views and their daily struggles, to represent them with integrity, you know, on the side of the people of North Kildare. I'm hearing a real hunger for change. Whatever Micheál Martin says about Fianna Fáil offering change, what I'm hearing is a collective, or I suppose I should say what I'm seeing, is a collective throwing of eyes to heaven. You know, Fianna Fáil don't represent change. Sinn Féin is the only party that can deliver real change, and people want that real change, and they know that we are the only viable party that can deliver it. I want North Kildare voices to be at the table when we sit down to draft a programme for government. I want Sinn Féin to be allowed to sort out housing, health, childcare, infrastructure. I want Sinn Féin to be able to show up those other parties for the incompetent money wasters that they are. I want to have Sinn Féin get a seat in North Kildare. And I want to get elected, of course. So I suppose my primary aim.
Just in terms of post-election, obviously the last 3 weeks have been a roller coaster. We've seen polls from the start and how the trend is up, and it's all looking really good for Sinn Féin in terms of what's going to happen next Sunday at the count. But you've mentioned that you saw Labour and the Greens lumped in as former coalition partners that have failed. What are your thoughts on a progressive left the possibility of a progressive left government if the numbers stack up?
Okay, very good question, Tony. In the first instance, I suppose votes have not even been cast, never mind counted. Personally, I think that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have had the stage for too long. They are not the only show in town. You're right there saying that the current opinion polls are showing a significant rise in the left of centre parties. Personally, I think we should look to other left of centre parties after the general election and look to form, for the very first time, a left-wing government in the state. Similar-minded people. The 4,000 homeless children, they just cannot be left waiting. We cannot let them down for some petty left purity. You know, if parties on the left refuse to attempt to offer a solution to the housing crisis, they should never be forgiven. You know, Tony, I'm really proud of our country. It's going against most other countries in the world that are veering right. Our lovely country is going left in a world skewed by this, you know, creeping further to the right. I love this country. It's broken my heart more than once. But it is important that the vulnerable in our society right now cannot be expected to wait. We saw in the leaders' debate there last week how little difference there is between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Like, they really are the, you know, with Mary Lou Cobb, the Tweedledee and the Tweedledum. journal.ie did a comparison of the two manifestos and found there was very little variance between them. You know, if they're not cogging each other's homework or when they're not trying to cog ours, I suppose, they are falling over themselves saying they won't talk to Sinn Féin after the general election. Well, I really don't think that this pair should be allowed to get away with thinking they have this state wrapped up to themselves. This is a republic. They don't have the divine right to the to a monopoly in government. I believe they have no ambition for Ireland. I have always said that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are happy to wait their turn in the wings, allowing the others their turn at the smash-and-grab politics that has been the order of the day since the foundation of this state. I actually believe they are not fit for government. The leader of our party has said we're open to coalition, but only if it's a Republican agenda matched to our own. And I would be, you know, would be a qualified yes, I suppose, in relation to, you know, the Labour Party. But Sinn Féin won't lie down like the Labour Party or the Green Party did. The mudslinging has happened already locally here too. But I know the people I know in Sinn Féin. We are principled politicians. We want the best for Ireland. They are good, kind, empathic people who live the daily struggles themselves, and we really want to get into government to give families a break. But I think that looking at the opinion polls, their left is looking very, very well.
Just on that, Rita, what do you want to say to the people of Kildare North?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
What do you want to say to the people of Kildare North?
First of all, I am asking them to come out and vote Sinn Féin, Ray the Cronin, number one. I am telling them that our policies are some far-fetched notion of utopia, that what Sinn Féin desire for people in Ireland is the norm in competently governed democracies. There is a marked difference this election. People are engaging and they want to talk to me about Sinn Féin's solutions to the problems they and their families are facing. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael should have run out of chances. These parties, they don't fear Sinn Féin following in their footsteps and making things worse. Their greatest fear is us succeeding in delivering the republic we were promised 100 years ago. We will take on the housing crisis and we will solve it. It's been a very, very short, sharp campaign. It's a physical impossibility to reach every door. I will be asking the people that I've met over the last few years who are listening to this podcast and who live in Oscar there just to give me the chance to vote for real change this election, to vote, give me the number one vote, please, and transfer for change.
Rita Cronin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and best of luck in the campaign. It's going to be a hell of a week.
It's going to be a hell of a week, and I hope that I'm sure that the backroom nasty, dirty politics is being decided. But I'm running a positive campaign, and I let them at them.
Good,
good. I let them at us, you know. I'll defy them. Let them do their worst for me.
Thanks, Rita, and thanks for taking the phone call.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks a million, Tony. No worries.
Bye.
Bye.